Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth. You've been hearing a lot about September 11th. The 10th anniversary is coming up in just a few days. And today, you've got a chance to talk back about it, to share your thoughts and your memories about what happened and what has changed in your life and in our community and our society as a whole. You know, people at the time that those terrible terrorist attacks took place said nothing is ever going to be the same. In some ways, that turned out to be true, in some it didn't. But I don't think anyone came through completely unscathed or didn't see any change in their life. And so today is an opportunity for everyone to talk back and to share those thoughts. It's an open mic day on Hometown Alaska, and we're going to try to just have a conversation about memories and changes from September 11th. So it depends, depending on you, and I'm hoping that you will pick up the phone and share some of your thoughts and memories. It's one of those topics that affects everyone, so there's nobody who's got an invalid comment on this subject, whether it be your sadness, your anger, analysis, or maybe just thoughts that it's all overblown. I'd be really interested in hearing what you have to say. And to get involved, what you do is pick up the phone and call 550-8433. That's within Anchorage. If you're calling from outside Anchorage, a toll-free number, 888-353-5752. And you can reach us on email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And I'll be giving those numbers more. So as soon as you think you might want to call, hopefully they'll be coming down the pike. But you may not have noticed that KSKA has a fantastic new website that is a really good source of all kinds of information, from community information to news to what's going on the radio station. And I know you hear from every news outlet out there how great the website is, but I've been messing around with it, and it really is exceptional. So anyway, if you're listening to a show on KSKA, you can go right to that show on the website, and it'll give you background about the show and then how to participate. So the phone numbers, you kind of don't have to wait for the phone numbers to come around. You can get right to them. And so what you do is go to alaskapublic.org and scroll down a little bit, and you'll come to Hometown Alaska and the show we're doing right now, a community conversation on September 11th. Click on that, and it will take you to this show and the resources about the show and how to participate. So I thought I'd kick it off by talking a little bit about my own experience on that day, which I'm guessing is probably not too different from what a lot of other people went through. I was lying in bed with my wife, Barbara, and the clock radio went off, and Bob Edwards' voice came into the room. Bob Edwards used to be the host of Morning Edition, and he had in his voice just a sound of total disbelief, as if what he was saying, he was not believing, that he couldn't believe it himself. And he's saying something about World Trade Tower had fallen. And so we naturally turned the TV on immediately, and there it was. And you just couldn't believe your eyes. And it was something that was sickening, really. And for whatever reason, when something like that happens, you feel like you've got to tell somebody about it. And we went rushing into our kids' bedroom, which was just down the hall. And the kids, you know, we're so used to telling them crazy stories and making stuff up that we woke them up and told them what had happened. And they were young elementary school kids, and they just sort of started to laugh. They thought we had to be telling them some kind of crazy story that wasn't true. And they really literally could not believe us until we brought them to the TV and they saw it. And then you're faced with this decision as a parent, because you realize that you are observing horrendous trauma that no one is ever going to forget, that you've probably just seen thousands of people's lives end. And the decision comes, well, do you watch it or do you not watch it? How much effect is that going to have on your kids, on their dreams and their lives in the future, to see, have those images. And is it even possible to protect them? Because we all remember how those images of the Twin Towers falling were replayed over and over and over again. And, so that was a tough decision, but I think we, you know, after a little while, you figured out, actually, this is not something you can protect a kid from. This is something that has become a part of life. And, you know, I think about it. My son, who was just in elementary school 10 years ago, is now off at college, and he's old enough to be sent to the Middle East and Afghanistan, where we're now still fighting over this one event that happened 10 years ago. He's not about to do that. We don't have a draft in this country, and he's in college. But it's strange to think that he's at that age, and that kids who were really not even old enough to know what is going on are coming to adulthood now. So that was my first moment of seeing September 11th and being aware of what happened and picking it up over the news. And I'd like to hear about yours. Where were you? Were you in Anchorage? When did you first hear the news? And what did you think? What did you feel? And how has it changed? I mean, has it really changed your life in some way? Has it changed the way you feel about your safety and about your government and about how you relate to other people? I have a feeling maybe it does, but you're the only ones who can tell. So pick up the phone, if you would, and give me a call at 550-8433. That's in Anchorage, 550-8433. And let's talk about September 11th and the impact of it. I've got a few guests who are going to come on with me today to talk about it, some of their experiences. But I know that some of our listeners, all of our listeners, probably have something to share. In my own family, I had a cousin who was in Tower 2 on the 104th floor. He was a manager at a bond trading firm called Sandler and O'Neill, and he was killed on that day. I didn't know him at all. His name was Martin Wolforth, nicknamed Buff. We went to the same college. He was a competitive golfer. His daughter Chloe was 16 at the time. She's now a young adult off in the world. And his wife Susan. They lived in Groton, Connecticut. I do know his parents, or his mother, Chick, is now dead. His father, Bob Wolforth, was an old friend and just a good family member, and just really, really destroyed them. You know, it was that sudden grief of losing a 46-year-old son all of a sudden was really a powerful change in their life for some elderly people. And so many people in that part of the country went through that. And it's hard for us to imagine at our distance, but I know my brother who lives in New Jersey, you know, his kids, lots of kids at their school lost someone in that attack. And the buildings that disappeared from the skyline were right there, and it was not far away. It was quite close at hand and quite near to people's hearts and near to their everyday experience. My parents, a lot of people know them, Eric and Caroline Wolforth, were in the area at the time. And I'm sure people remember all the planes were grounded and they couldn't get back. And it was a definite source of concern, you know, just being stuck. It's always being stuck, but then being stuck for that reason is especially so. So let's take our first caller. Mike is calling from Anchorage. Mike, what was your experience?
Hi, I was actually a junior in high school on September 11th, 2001. I had woken up early, turned on the TV, and instead of going to like cartoons or something, I turned on the news and saw the first plane hitting, and I didn't even know what to do at first. It was just shocking, and I was trying to figure out if it was real, and, you know, the news announcers were, you know, they were just going crazy. And so I changed to another news station and saw the second plane hit. And that was one of the worst feelings I ever felt in my life. It was like this sinking pit in my heart. Like you could tell that, you know, hundreds of people, if not more, had just died. And in fact, it was over 3,000 eventually. And I think the only feeling that mirrored that is when I was watching George Bush's State of the Union address in 2003, when he lied to pitch our country into war against a country that had nothing to do with the attacks that were carried out against us. And that was the only other feeling I felt in my life that mirrored the intensity of loss that I felt for other human beings.
Just that sinking feeling you had. Yeah. Well, I mean, you bring up the war in Iraq, and I just went online to pick up some of the stats on September 11th, and there's really an amazing amount of stuff on the internet to learn. The World Trade Center, the final tally was 2,606 people who had died. And of course, you have to add to that the people on the planes and the people in the Pentagon. Iraq, we lost so far 4,476 U.S. soldiers, 179 from the United Kingdom, and in Afghanistan, 1,760.
Which doesn't even include the hundreds of thousands of dead Iraqi civilians, you know, or the other tremendous costs to human life that occur when the military budget explodes and all of our social spending programs are cut. And now the Republicans that caused all of this ridiculous out-of-control spending for the past 10 years are using it as leverage to attack the first Democratic president that we've had that was a real Democrat since the last one got killed. Because I don't count Jimmy Carter. He was just nuts. It's sick. It's wrong. Our country has been hijacked, and the real terrorists are the people profiting off of these wars. And that's just the plain truth.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. We've got a lot of folks calling, so I'm going to move on, but I appreciate your comments. Okay. Thanks for calling
in. Thank you.
Now I'd like to go to Jason Ott, who is, I've actually invited to be on with us today. And Jason, is one of those people who saw their life change in a very fundamental way because he was a member of the National Guard and has been deployed twice, since, September 11th occurred. Jason, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Charles.
So you were teaching in a classroom when you got the news.
I was 22 years old. I was doing my student teaching back in Michigan, and the first plane hit during my second period class. I was actually out in the hallway talking to my professor, who had come in to observe me, make sure I was doing everything good, and we saw it on the TV screen in the classroom next door, and he's like, "What's going on?" And my response was, "You know, that guy just shows crazy movies all the time." And then when we walked back into my classroom, it was on my TV as well. For me, it was a day that really confirmed that I had made the right career choices, both as a teacher and as a guardsman. You know, throughout the day, I was working with students and helping them go through the emotions. I was fortunate enough, right after that period was my prep period, so I quickly gathered resources on terrorism and was able to have something to present to them and ideas to go over. And as the day unfolded, you know, the TV news told me I was going to be, that my unit was activated.
Oh, you found out that quick. Wow.
I found out from the newscaster.
I think most people at that time thought being in the National Guard meant you were going to help out in a flood or some kind of a local emergency. But you knew that you could go overseas.
Oh yeah, we knew that. But you know, up to that point, the National Guard hadn't been used, you know, since the Gulf Storm. My unit hadn't been used during Gulf Storm. We had a handful of guys who were, you know, war veterans, and they were, you know, looked up to, but it definitely became real. I immediately went down to the office and called my unit, and it ended up just being in the hysteria of the day, you know, that it had been reported incorrectly. We were not activated. We were not called up. It wasn't for a few years later that I actually deployed, but you know, that day definitely did change things for the military. You know, we went from having, you know, just a handful of people in every unit that had combat experience and war experience to, you know, that being the norm now. Most people have gone at least once, if not more.
Now, some people wanted to get out of the Guard as soon as they found out that they could have that disruption, but you went twice, and I guess the second time you were at Bagram and were actually under attack. What keeps you in the Guard? What keeps you doing that kind of service?
You know, it's funny. I've been in the Guard since I was 18, and I really can't imagine not being in it. It's the sense you get, the pride you get for serving the country. It's the same reason I'm a teacher. You know, you're doing something for somebody else. And, you know, with the military, with going, you know, like last year, this time I was in Bagram, Afghanistan. September 11th had a different feel to it being in Afghanistan. One of the unique experiences with that deployment, I volunteered teaching English at a school that the Koreans were running for the Afghan people. And we talked about September 11th a little bit. You know, we had brought up, they had looked at a map of the U.S. and looked at the major cities, and, you know, they said New York, and that's where those towers were. You know, and they were questioning. They wanted to know, because they didn't completely understand. You know, these were 18-year-olds who, you know, 10 years ago, they were 8. So, you know, it's had a tremendous impact on their life as well.
Yeah, everyone in the world. Well, Jason, I really want to thank you for being with us. It's a great perspective to have. And I think whatever people think about American policy, we all thank you for your service. Without it, I think that we'd all be much less safe and much poorer. And so your service as a teacher and as a guardsman. So thanks very much for being with us.
Yes, thank you, Charles. Have a good day.
All right. There were a lot of callers on the line, and we're going to try to get to every single one. If you're waiting on the line, please continue waiting and just listen to the show, and I'll get to you when I can. Next, I'd like to go to Heather, who is in Anchorage and was involved in emergency management. What was your part, Heather?
Hi, Charles. This is Heather Handyside.
Oh, hi.
I was involved in emergency management for the city. I was the city's emergency manager from about 2004 to 2008. And I also worked for the Works Administration during September 11th. And I just wanted to just talk a little bit about, you know, what the city, or how I saw the city's emergency response kind of change over that time. First of all, when I was working in the mayor's office in the immediate aftermath of September 11th, there was just an influx of people who were concerned. They wanted to know how this could impact their lives and what they could do, how they could be prepared, what they could do to make themselves safe. So we conducted just a series of about 4-hour classes to train people just to do all the basics, have an emergency kit, you know, have water, have a plan, those kind of basic things. And that seemed to really reassure people. People weren't sure what they could do, but just to have a plan, or to acknowledge that they could have some responsibility or have a role, seemed really reassuring. I think we trained about 2,000 people in about 4 months after that. And then when I became the city's emergency manager, you know, emergency management is all about dealing with any disaster that happens, whether that's a flood or a wildfire or something man-made like terrorism. And I would say that generally the response is going to be the same. It's the same philosophy. You're still going to have people that need to go to a shelter, or who need to shelter in place at their homes, or you may have almost every disaster will likely include a mass casualty event where you have to partner with hospitals. And so what I saw after September 11th was just a heightened urgency from community partners. You know, the hospitals wanted to work more closely with us.
People suddenly really cared about it, yeah.
Yeah. These are all things that people knew that they needed to do. They needed to have a generator in the hospital. They needed to have a decontamination tent. Our first responders needed to, you know, remember how to put on their hazmat suits. But these things took a new urgency. We worked together a lot more collaboratively. And I'd say, even though this was prompted by a man-made event, all of these things, all of these actions will serve the city regardless of what kind of disaster, whether it's wildfire or flood or windstorm. So overall, I'd say the city's better prepared as a result.
So that's, in a sense, it's a kind of a positive thing, that we're preparedness is good, so long as it doesn't turn into paranoia.
Yeah. So it's one way to just use the tragedy for, you know, community good. Mm-hmm.
Well, Heather, thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
I appreciate Bye-bye. It. I'm now going to go to a guest that I invited to be on the show, Dr. Aaron Wolf, who is a psychiatrist here in Anchorage. And I thought it'd be worthwhile to talk about the psychological impact of September 11th and, you know, and what we've learned, if anything, since then about how to deal with these kinds of traumas. Dr. Wolf, thank you for being with us.
Yes, good afternoon, Charles.
So maybe you have your own September 11th story, but I really wanted to, you know, the emotions are so strong and they range from, still range from anger to grief to, you know, a certain amount of, you know, there's disbelief, conspiracy theories. Was this a big psychological event for the whole country, do you think?
Yeah, I do certainly believe it. It was and still is in many ways. I mean, it was... An attack on America as, you know, many, many people see it. And so it was more than the 3,000 people that died. It was more than just the families of those individuals and the first responders. It was probably because it was on TV and people witnessed it, something that affected almost everybody.
And has anything changed in terms of how this kind of incident might be treated, or how people look at this sort of incident, and what, you know, what professionals can do about it, if anything?
Well, I think that there were two things. One is, and I thank you for sending me an article yesterday, is that the studies have shown that we really were more resilient, by and large, than many professionals thought initially, so that, you know, many Americans were affected by it, but actually grew stronger through it. I think a number of the things that we learned about it, and that was highlighted in this New York Times article, is that the professionals need to be there to be available, rather than to dive in and have people relive it. And I think that's true for a lot of PTSD kinds of things, is that sometimes simply making people relive the experience is not always the best way to get it treated. To be available and to work out the feelings is something that actually a number of professionals have learned about this.
So you're trying to give the person a sense of security and that they can talk to you, but maybe that it's reliving is not the best thing. And it kind of brings me back to the thought of that video that we saw over and over and over again. In a sense, it just kept bringing back a sense of grief and horror.
Right, right, right. I mean, and sometimes the media does not do us a favor about a number of things, whether it's that incident or sometimes, you know, if there's a flood or an earthquake or this, you know, if you are tuned to your TV over a 24-hour period, you may see the same thing 30 times, and that's not necessarily healthy. You know, being aware is healthy. Having it over and over and over again is not always healthy. But one of the things that, as I was starting to say, that people are resilient, and that those of us who were not in New York and not there sort of have a feeling, but it isn't that kind of trauma of the people who were literally there or who literally lost their, you know, their family and loved ones.
Right. So it's perfectly normal for people to feel grief and to feel sad about it, even to shed a few tears. That doesn't mean that they've got a psychological problem like they would if they had been in the incident.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. And I think the kinds of things that are happening this coming weekend are really important. There was a really good program on the development of the new memorial and talking about that. And there are going to be things showing the families of those who died there at Ground Zero. And I think this kind of thing, it will be very healing for the entire country.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Aaron Wolf, thanks so much for being with us today. I appreciate you taking the time out of your day.
You're welcome. Thank you for asking, Charles.
All right. Now I'd like to go to Paul, who is calling us from Palmer, and sounds like he has a personal story about September 11th. Paul? Paul, are you still with us, falling from Palmer? All right, he may have had to wait for too long. So the show is Hometown Alaska. My name is Charles Wolfworth. We're just having a conversation, open-ended, on the 10th anniversary of September 11th. Where were you when it happened? And how has it changed your life? How has it changed the community and the country? And really diverse views and diverse emotions around this. And so I think it's worthwhile for everybody to sort of have their piece. And we have a lot of callers who have called in, and some can only wait so long before they've got to move on. But if you have something you want to say, I hope you will pick up the phone and call, and we'll try to get everybody on. The number here is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. And the out-of-town number, if you're calling, it's a toll-free number, 888-353-5752. And you can also email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And do we have Paul back? Yes. Paul, are you with us?
Yes, hi.
Oh, good. I'm sorry we lost you before. So tell us about your experience.
Well, I woke up in time to see the second plane hit the tower, and the next morning I found out that our family friends, Jim and Mary Trentini, were on that second plane. And since then, I've written a compass piece for the Daily News on about Jim and Mary, and the way it's impacted me is that they were on their way to babysit their kids in California, and he was immersed in the community as a teacher and coach, and so he left a legacy. I guess I would frame it as a legacy of caring, and competence. So this anniversary just brings back some of those memories.
Oh, I'm sure it does. Yeah. So how did that affect the family? I mean, to lose the two parents.
Well, it's a ripple effect. The family's been very quiet. My family, I have 9 siblings, and most of them were students of Jim's. And the ripple effect, being a teacher coach in a small community, is they literally touch hundreds of lives. Well, maybe thousands.
Yeah.
But, I've started a business focused on creating peace and try to do my writing around human spirituality and tying everyday events to being kind and caring for each other.
Oh, that's beautiful. So
that's a ripple effect.
That's a wonderful reaction. Okay, Paul, I really appreciate you sharing that with us. Thanks so much for calling.
All right, take care. Bye.
And now I'd like to go to Heather calling from Anchorage. You were in France when it happened.
Yes. Hi, Charles. My husband and I were in France, supposedly going on a tour down the Loire to drink good wine, but both of us had managed to catch cold, and we were feeling lousy. So we were looking for a bed and breakfast, and we went into this rather large place, and I went in and asked if it was a bed and breakfast, and the woman said, "No, but my daughter is. Let me call her." And as we were standing beside the car, and she called, and she was speaking in French, but she said, "A Boeing hit New York." That is their term. It's a Boeing rather than an airplane. And she was trying to tell me in rather poor French, in rather poor English, and my French is lousy, what was happening. And finally, she put her daughter on the phone, who spoke excellent English and gave us directions on how to get to her house. And as I was talking to her on the phone, the second plane hit. And you could literally hear the television in the background and hear her crying. And we got to her house, and my schoolgirl French came back pretty quickly and, of course, watched that ugly scene several times. We were ill. She found a doctor in a place that was bigger. We were literally out in the boondocks, but in a little tiny area, and got us into a larger city, found a doctor. We went to a doctor who gave us some prescriptions, and I was in a pharmacy trying to say what I wanted, and a woman came up to me who, she said, "I used to teach English. I think I can help." And she told the pharmacist what I needed. And then she took me in her arms and started to cry. And we both cried. And I mean, I cry thinking about it today.
Yeah.
and a whole bunch of people gathered around me and held me. And, you know, I kind of made a joke out of it afterwards that it was the first time since the end of World War II that the French really loved Americans.
Yeah.
But I truly felt as though they empathized, that small crowd of people empathized with what had happened to me, to our country, to America, and that they loved us.
Yeah. That is such a beautiful thing to recall, because it was very, very true. All those good, warm feelings that came out, just the heartfelt feelings. And since then, there's been so much that's been horrible and negative. But right at the beginning, there was that amazing coming together. And I appreciate you sharing and reminding us of that. So thanks so much for calling, Heather.
Thank you.
All right. Wow. It's a very emotional show today, and something that I feel good about the fact we're doing and sharing, because it's a big event in my life, and it brings back some important memories. We're going to take a break here in a moment and come back, and when I do, I'll give the phone numbers again. For all of you who are waiting on hold to come on the air, please keep waiting. I'm going to get to as many as I can, and we'll be back in just a moment with more of Hometown Alaska.
Listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and we're talking about September 11th. Where were you? How did it feel? How did it change your life and our community? And just quite an outpouring of thoughts. I wish we had more than an hour. So the phone number to call if you want to share your thoughts is 550-8433. That's within Anchorage. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. That might be a good way to use, because we do have a lot of the lines tied up at the moment. Do remember, if you're listening at the 7 o'clock airing of the show, that it's a rebroadcast, and so you won't be able to call in. Now I'd like to go to Ian, who is calling from Wasilla and has been very patient. Ian, what was your memory?
Hi. I was actually 15 years old, and I was a sophomore in college in St. Louis Park, Minnesota, which is just outside of Minneapolis, and I remember we walked into our Spanish class, and our teacher was just sitting at her desk with one of the teacher's aides, and they were holding each other and crying, and the TV was on, and we were watching it, and at 15, still not really sure what this was about to unfold. You know, we weren't sure what we were watching, but I remember thinking, you know, something's about to change, like this is a big deal. And I guess I never had a really strong emotional reaction until I got home that night. And we had just 6 days before gotten a visitor from Mexico. She was a 17-year-old girl who was going to be a exchange student with us. And so we were talking, and she was speaking in very broken English, and we were trying to speak with her. And I remember we were all really angry because she said something along the lines of, well, America deserves this, something that America deserves. And so obviously first our reaction was anger. Like, how could you say something like this, especially when it just happened today? But what was kind of neat about that is it turned into a really interesting conversation in our family for that next year when she was with us about what do other people see Americans as, and what is, you know, we as a country are so young that it's hard for us to see what our identity is, and it's hard for us to know, you know, what is it to be American, because everyone's got their own story about that.
Yeah.
But to hear that perspective of an outsider, and an outsider who's here when something that big happened, that was such a hard thing to talk about.
Yeah, that's it. And that's it. It's interesting the different reactions that people had along those lines. We heard a very different one just in a minute ago, and I think we'll have more later on. But that's a great thing to have plugged in. Thanks so much for calling in.
Yeah, thank you.
Now I'd like to go to another guest, and this is kind of a good segue from the last caller. Rabah Chetfor is an active member of the Islamic community in Anchorage, and I invited him to come on specifically because I didn't know if we would have that perspective on the show today, and I think it's a really important one. He's the owner of the Aladdin's restaurant, and it was kind enough to come and talk with us today. Rabah, thank you for being with us.
You're very welcome. It's our pleasure.
So I would think that that this kind of anniversary could be difficult because some people, despite, you know, what President Bush said and what President Obama has definitely said, you know, in some way blame Islam for what's happened. And do you feel, do you receive negative responses from people because of that?
Well, my first reaction when that was said, and I started, a little bit recovering about the shock of what we saw that early morning and the days after, is how little the people knew about Islam, and not only for the non-Muslims, but including Muslims. How little they knew about Islam. So we started, my family and I and some friends in here, to start to educate people a little bit about Islam. What is Islam and what is the culture that is associated with that, where the people come from with Islam, where some people say it is Islam when it is the way they behave is actually more cultural than it is Islam. So it's been a long process, and up to date, it is still difficult for some people, especially for some of the Muslims that are non-Arabic, Arabic speaking, differ between those two. Between what is Islam, you know, what is actually Islam, the Quran teaches, and what is the culture teaches. At one point, it became one for many countries that are in the Islamic world, non-Arab countries. So it is a struggle still for us to understand why they cannot come to terms with that. And the media, parts of the media, has not helped into explaining Islam. Personally, I come from a very moderate background, having been raised under the in Algeria, born during the French occupation, and then independence in 62. So Algeria has been very moderate until the 90s, when the Islamists won the election, then it was declined, and the slaughter that ensued that killed over 200,000 people. We call it the Black Decade in Algeria. So for us to say that, in here we are a little bit sheltered in Anchorage, yes. Alaska.
There's not many. It's a very small community, isn't it?
It is a very small community, but even the larger community of Anchorage, the Jewish community, the Filipino, all the other communities that are involved have been very supportive, unlike many other places, for instance, in London that I've traveled so many times and many other places, and understandably so. Some people cheered, and that's a minority of what happened on that day, 10 years ago, this Sunday. But for the majority of people, it was just unbelievable. It was an utter shock. Now, understanding why they did that is not, again, in the name of Islam. But in here right now, in 2011, that is 10 years later, I was just talking to someone about why we are, you know, about the upspring that is happening in the Middle East, and Algeria is going to be soon, and I believe many others is going to happen, you know, in this chain of events.
Yeah, the rebellions. Mm-hmm.
And somebody mentioned to me, he said, Rabbi, do you realize that America, and that is a non-Muslim telling me that, said, Rabbi, do you realize that America and Obama are bombing in at war with 5-6 different countries that we are going with drones and killing instead of having diplomacy with them?
Hmm.
And I said, truly, as a Muslim, and have been, I never looked at it that way. I thought that it was just after the people in there.
Yeah.
But in, he said, but in the eyes of others, in the streets of the Cairo, in the streets of, that's what they're talking about. We're droning, you know, Yemen, Bahrain, Syria, you know. And I don't know if we are doing the right thing with that.
So we might be creating more terrorists, in other words.
Absolutely. I think the recipe has been, you know, like somebody told me, he said it would have been easier to send those drones and killing the people that have been oppressing all those people.
Yes. Yeah.
And it would have been, you know, the collateral damage would have been a lot less.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for being with me, Rabbi Chetfor, at Aladdin's Restaurant. And it sounds like you're an ambassador for Islam in Anchorage, one of very few people here. And your point of view is much appreciated. And I think we should probably have you on for much longer sometime when we have a chance.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the aviation aspects of this thing. And Kimberly, calling from Palmer, I guess, was on a medevac flight on that day. Is that right, Kimberly?
I was a pilot on flying medevac at that time.
Wow. So tell me about it.
Well, for the first day, they grounded all the airplanes in the United States, but then it slowly opened up and emergency aircraft were allowed to fly. And so we did several runs that day, and we went out to the west coast of Alaska, and a military aircraft, one of the F, I don't know whether it was a 14, 15, or 16, came up next to us and looked over at us in the airplane. And we waved to him, and he saluted us back and went on.
Wow.
And also during that time, which really amazed me, is we could see the military aircraft flying a hatch pattern across the pipeline all the way up to Prudhoe Bay, protecting the pipeline. And I guess what made me proud to be American.
Yeah, yeah. I remember those planes flying over Anchorage, and in one way it was very weird to have the air above Anchorage with no planes, and then these fighters would fly over, and yeah,
exactly.
It was, they were defending us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I knew when I heard it on the radio that aviation would change. You know, commercial aircraft had never, I don't think people who flew commercial aircraft had ever thought of them being used as weapons before. And that's the first time they were.
Yeah, yeah, hopefully the last.
So it changed all of our view of commercial flying, pilots and passengers.
It sure has. Well, thanks, Kimberly. That was a really good, really good contribution. I appreciate very much your calling.
Sure.
Mutali is on with us from Anchorage, and you were an international student at the time? Are you with us, Mutali from Anchorage? All right. Well, she had to wait a very long time, so it's possible that that she couldn't wait any longer, and I understand that. So let me turn to Roger, also has been patient. He's calling from Eagle River. Roger? Roger, are you with us? Okay. Well, it's a lot of calls, and so people are waiting quite a while, and some of them are not being able to wait long enough. So, yeah, let's go to Jeff calling from Palmer. Jeff?
Hello.
Yes, Charles. You're on the air.
Thanks. And I'd like to relate back to Jason from the National Guard, who actually recognized that it isn't only the military that serves this country. It's teachers. It's a lot of other people, environmentalists and others, who serve this country. And I also respect Kimberly's very recent message. I was on a Delta plane back to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania to attend my grandfather's funeral when we arrived in Salt Lake, and all the flights were being canceled and the news was taken off the air, but there was a little store in the Salt Lake terminal there that actually had a TV showing what was happening, and it showed the second airplane hitting the towers, and it was phenomenal. I mean, there must have been hundreds of people standing and watching. Everything else was shut down at that airport, and this TV was on, and I looked at a woman next to me, and I said, is this a movie? And she said, no, this is the news.
Mm, yeah. And so you were then stuck wherever your plane landed, eh?
Well, I was stuck, but the fun part was I had worked in Salt Lake in the past, and I had some friends there. And after spending a night in Salt Lake City, I came back to the airport, and they said, you know what? We're not going to be flying for a while, and if you're going to Alaska, you have to cross Canadian airspace. So, you know, you're not. It's going to be a while.
Yeah.
So I went to the car rental, and they still had some cars to rent, and I rented a little four-wheel drive for the price of you know, the cheapest car they had, actually, and went down to Moab, where I actually had spent some time in a former life. And I went out into the arches, and this was the fun part for me, was I think I had a more wilderness experience than Edward Abbey ever had in the arches, because there were no airplanes flying. It
yeah.
was dead silence and just gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous desert.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Jeff. That's nice to hear a little bit of a happy memory. So thanks for being with us. We're going to try to go through a few more callers quickly here because we've got so many and running out of time. And another aviation one from Judy calling from Wasilla. And I guess you flew out from Newark the day before the disaster. Is that right, Judy?
I had a pen pal friend in England for now it's more than 50 years. And I was flying to visit her. I landed on the evening of the 10th. And the next morning we got up and went to her married daughter's house. And Veronica said, well, let's take all the kids back. And, of course, all they have are little cars in England. We had to take two cars. And we got to Veronica's house, and her daughter said, Mom, turn on the TV. Some plane has crashed in America. And we turned on the TV just in time to see the second plane hit.
Mm, yeah.
And I had my rest of my vacation there in England, and of course my family what day did I fly? And so it was a trauma for them, and I had trouble getting hold of them to let them know I was okay. But finally, we figured out we used the internet. We got through that way.
Yeah, yeah. So the same airport. Yeah, that's kind of scary.
Yes, it is.
But thanks.
Well, it was a wonderful trip in the end because I got to see my friend. But,
yeah, yeah.
The English people were wonderful, absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, there was a lot of giving during that period. Thanks so much for calling, Judy.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Now I'd like to talk to Michelle. Michelle, you have family in New York?
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Yes, wow, my son was in New York, and he's actually a stockbroker. And I had told him about a year prior. I said, Jason, I don't know what this is about, but it's really heavy in my heart. And he's like, okay, Mom, what do you need? I said, I don't think I need anything. I just, please listen to what I have to say. And he's like, okay. I said, whatever you do, do not work in Manhattan. He's like, Mom, you're sounding weird, but I'll okay. I said, make sure you're at least on Long Island if you're going to be working in the stock market. And that's what he did. He had a couple of friends that missed a train that day, which, you know, he grew up with, which was incredibly a blessing way, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
But just prior to moving from Arizona, I used to live in Sedona with my other three children, and for 4 days prior to the move, I would just sit down and just a river of tears would be coming. And I didn't know why, and the sadness in my heart felt like it was being stabbed with a knife. And I had this prophetic dream of a bald eagle on its back with seven arrows in its heart. And I was so shaken by the dream that I called one of my medicine people that I, you know, communicate with. And at the same time this happened, he was placing sacred stones in areas around the earth. And he said, you know, pay attention to the Hopi prophecy. And I, you know, I worked with medicinal Native heritage nations. They've blessed me with just incredible, abundant, shall we say, blessing way, good medicine, good red road, as they would say. And I couldn't figure out, Charles, why I was weeping. So I said, okay, did I not come to closure with saying so long to some of the friends that I've been with here? You know, I thought maybe it's, you know, on a personal level. And so we were at a hotel, and I just kept crying. And then going, I was actually traveling across country, and I had this heavy heart and this incredible feeling that, you know, this ominous feeling, and I didn't know what it was. And then so we were at the hotel, and we had come, I brought my kids, I was going to bring them the muffins and the cereal and whatever they wanted that morning for breakfast. And I'm standing there watching, you know, New York. And I grew up there all my life, and now I'm in Alaska. But I was viewing the screen as if it was a foreign country.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember my heart and not being able to communicate with anybody, and then finding out the details and saying, oh, my heavens, you know, and always, always say a prayer for those who are, you know, who, you know, took their lives. And the,
yeah,
not only that, but all of the changes and the people that have, the cleanup.
Yeah, just
and
awful.
I have a dear friend. Yeah,
say, Michelle, you know what? I mean, that was a great comment. We need to move on because we've got so many other callers, but I really do appreciate your calling.
Oh,
so,
thank you.
Thanks for being with us.
You know, let's keep our country strong.
Yeah, and keep these people in our hearts. Okay. Debbie, you called earlier, and we lost you because you had to wait so long. Did you have a comment?
I did. I wanted to first, I'm glad to hear you have so many listeners from Palmer. But although that morning was terrifying because we have close family who live in Manhattan and work downtown, and it took hours before they could tell us they were okay, that weekend also coincided with some other traumatic events in my life, and it makes me think about how every day in the country people are being born, people are dying, people are getting married, and while my coincidental events involved death and sad things, so the time always brings back all these emotions, but at least in some way they're similar emotions to deal with. I've always been curious, how do people deal with it when it's the day their child is born? So, you know, it's arguably the happiest day of their life in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And or maybe they were scheduled to be married that day. And you can't exactly shield from a 10-year-old what everyone else is thinking on their birthday. And you may not have time to have them call in, but I'd really like to hear how parents and people handle that, those coincidences.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point about how it weighs down on happy events and how it sort of changes the way you perceive sad events. And that I guess September 11th is every day for somebody out there having a tragedy. The thing that was really unique here is that, so we all felt it at once, you know, we were all in it at the same time. But I appreciate that insight. That's a really good one. And I want to, we've got a few minutes left, maybe some time to get a few more calls left. So I'll give you the phone number. But if you want to continue the discussion, and we do have an awful lot of people who are calling, we have the ability to continue the discussion online. We have a Facebook page for alaskapublic.org, very easy to find. Actually, one of Harriet Drummond was on and made the same point that we just heard from Debbie about other tragedies happening at the same time. So I would invite you to continue with the discussion there. And we've got also at alaskapublic.org on our website, you'll find resources and some of the stuff we're talking about. Paul has just sent me the Compass piece that he wrote on this topic, and we can post that after the show if you want to take a look at it. So the number here is 550-8433, and outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And remember, don't call during the 7 o'clock hour. That's the repeat period. And we'll get on as many as we can. Can't promise everybody, but right now I've got Dawn calling. from Anchorage to talk about the wounded, some of the wounded warriors who have been wounded since September 11th. Dawn?
Yeah. Hello, Charles. Thank you so much for this program. It's really a topic that we can hear. It's near and dear to many of us and has changed our lives a lot. I'm with Bicycle Commuters of Anchorage, but I'd like to take this opportunity to let your listeners know about a way they can show their support for our returning military soldiers through the Wounded Warriors Project. We have a local business, Spinard business, actually Bosco's Comics, and Bosco's Comics has purchased and donated hundreds of various size flags for the 10th anniversary of September 11th, and Bosco's is donating the flags in exchange for a small donation to the Wounded Warriors Project. And Bicycle Commuters of Anchorage is really encouraging all bicycle commuters, everyone who supports the military, everyone who was really traumatized by this event, to stop by Bosco's, make a donation to the Wounded Warriors Project, and fly their flags when they're bicycling for the entire month of September. And what we will do in October, all the proceeds that we make from the flags will be delivered to the Alaska Elks in support of the Wounded Warriors Project here in October. So I really encourage everyone to fly those flags in memory of, in honor of September 11th.
All right, Dawn. Thanks for telling us about that. And you can maybe go ahead and, if you could put a comment on Facebook on our alaskapublic.org, people can refer back to that. That'd be helpful. Now I want to go to Bob, who is something about another comment responding to being in Europe. Bob?
Yes. Well, I was at home recovering from injury that I received at work and had already bought my tickets for a trip to Europe. And the strange thing was, is once I got over there, I was in Munich.
And we just have a little time left, Bob. So
go. All right, Munich, and people kept on looking at me saying, "You're American." I said, "Yeah." "Well, what are you doing here?" And I said, "Well, I'm on vacation." And the thing was, is that I still don't understand, is that the whole permutation of fear that we have exhibited, and the fact that we have a tendency to overreact. Munich suffered great tragedy in 72 with the Olympics and the attack there, and it was just, you know, 30 years later, we received an attack very much similar, suicide flyers. And to this day, you know, people use that as a form of, you know, justification of all sorts of stuff that...
You know, Bob, we have to go, and I appreciate you got the last word there, and I appreciate you calling in. I'm sorry to cut you off, but we are out of time. And I want to thank all of the callers. Martin didn't make it on. Martin, maybe you can post something on the website. It's been a great hour, and coming up next week, Kathleen McCoy will be hosting a program talking about the Town Square 49 portion of alaskapublic.org website, which is a place for community discussion. My name is Charles Woolforth. Thank you for being with us today on Hometown Alaska, and we'll be back next week.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.